change and update the way we deliver the content to the consumer base. And consumers are getting more and more exposed to enhanced services, right? So this is sort of the category of the why. Like, why are we going through this and making this investment? Consumers now are exposed at every turn to different kinds of television production products, right? We walk through Costco and Best Buy and we're picking out that furniture, the big screen televisions. We're all seeing things like high dynamic range, color gamut that we can't deliver in conventional ways, extended color gamut, beautiful images, 4K UHD signals, and enhanced surround sound and things like that. So we walk through that, we make consumer buying decisions about that, and it creates that requirement or that reason that consumers may look for and want things like 4K or HDR in sports broadcast or whatever. So then they have options, streaming content, cloud delivery, and things like that. So my part of the equation in my part of Sony is upstream in the decisions that need to be made or will need to be made at the next technology refresh to supply those signals. And it's not unlike what we did for the movement from SD to HD when digital television converted, which was not that long ago, and in history, shortly after the turn of the century when the specs came out, and then leading up to 2009 when we sort of transitioned into digital television, we did that so that we could deliver enhanced services to the consumer, and consumers got a taste of high definition in widescreen, enhanced sound, enhanced color performance, and so that sort of created a demand. So the punchline here is to look upstream, and what I'll explain is what's going to happen when we have to make similar decisions as we did on that phase of things. Station groups and media production companies had to look at it and go, okay, how fast are the consumers embracing HD or the new services? When do we have to make a change? Do we have to make a change? And what's the impact on budgets and people and all those things that we choose every time we do a technology refresh in the plant, in the physical plant, all the plumbing and the mechanics of cameras connecting to switchers and servers connecting to master control and all the plumbing of the plant. We're at that similar inflection point, or at least point is to start planning for those things, look ahead at what has to change to deliver those things to the business requirements. If we think we want to future-proof what we invest in, and our core router then is end of life, end of support, needs to be changed, we get that question of, do we get the new version of what we've always had, or do we try to future-proof because we see on the horizon different services? We see a need for flexibility in formatting. Maybe we want to produce something in HDR or 4K for part of the time. Maybe we want to do resource sharing between a primary station and a sister station or within a media group. Maybe we want to be able to move signals across floors and across the campus and across between cities. And that all points you back to, how do we solve that? We solve that with a giant move towards IP in the production center. We have IP around us everywhere, from our cell phone to our smart devices into the house to our laptops and Wi-Fi, everywhere. That's never made it too far into the production chain. Cameras connecting to monitors do not have IP in between them, largely. So although serial digital, it's been reliable and bulletproof, and we know that. In 5 or 10 years, we'll look back, I think, on SDI quite fondly, like dial tone. Like, it was so simple, and it worked every time. But what we're doing in making the change between the piece of wire that gets the signal from our camera to our monitor, for example, and we're eliminating that or changing that, which makes it significantly more complex. And so part of that decision, either sooner or later, is do we take the coax out, replace it with Ethernet fibers, and start to meld in the two worlds of IT, of Internet Protocol cloud stuff, and broadcast engineering that needs to carry uncompressed high bandwidth signals that are not used to living on IP networks. So this transition is not a small step, and it requires sort of starting to look ahead at what it means for budgets and technologies and supportability, and it impacts everything from migrating the camera heads to the production switcher to the core router in the middle of the building, which in a typical station, depending on the market, might be, and if you're on the operational side, probably things that you probably don't see, but you might have a router that is 500 signals in and 500 signals out, or 1,000 in, 1,000 out. A lot of coax knitting together those signals. All that then has to sort of start to go through a change in order to deliver the flexibility, the format flexibility, the services that are becoming a requirement, or at least becoming an option in what we deliver to consumers. So main point being plan ahead and start to look at those things for your technology refresh. And then a couple of things are going to happen on that way. This starts to blend in the IT side of the house and the broadcast engineering side of the house. And so this cabling, this plumbing, you know, point-to-point, serial digital, high-speed connections begins to change. The core router then, at the appropriate time, or that decision is to say, we're going to change or migrate that core router that connects everything to everything and do it in a really, really different way that behaves differently, that is different to troubleshoot and manage and document. And that's kind of the scary part, but it's manageable. So part of the point is we're kind of past the really, really hard part. It's manageable, and it can be done, and we're doing it in stations and media companies across the country. Fundamentally, in the technology then, it is melding together what we know about serial digital, about point-to-point communication, video, audio, and metadata signals moving between devices. And that has requirements that we know and we deal with every day. High bandwidth, high speed, clock-dependent signals into and out of all the devices. The guys down the hall on the IT side are used to networking things, servers, laptops, Wi-Fi points, all those sorts of things. But they are not used to the bandwidth that we need to move cameras uncompressed, right? It's orders of magnitude higher bandwidth speeds. So just diagramming out the bandwidth requirements for a whole bunch of cameras coming into a fabric and exiting a fabric is one challenge. The networking is not used to clock-dependent signals. Like, there's nothing that you normally plug in on the corporate IT side of the house that particularly cares about a clock. Doesn't care about Blackburst or tri-level sync or anything that's timing the house. Never had to. IP is always best effort sort of packetizing. So those two things, both in technology and people, there's typically two different groups, but now starting to manage together, and both need to learn from the other side of the house to make this work. The fundamental idea is that the core technology driving all the touch points in the plant needs both skill sets, the expertise from both sides to make this work, to get us back to par of what we're used to. And we're used to simple things like camera 1 to monitor 10 take, like, and it's a cross point and it goes and it does it every time. Those things have to start to melt together. Some of the big media companies are doing that. I'll show you some examples. But it will start to then become on the radar of station groups and individual stations, large markets, mid-markets, and throughout. At least the consideration of, like SD, when do we go HD, SDI, when do we go to IP? IP from the core out, not just IP around the edges. During the pandemic, we learned a lot about how do we leverage IP and networking to do remote production, for example, so that we don't have to have 15 people in a small control room or a dozen people in an OB van outside the arena. How can we extend the components through creative networking and let people work remotely and let people work far apart, and then do things like resource sharing? If I'm not using my components past 11 o'clock East Coast time, can my sister station on the West Coast reach in and grab resources like DME channels and graphics parts and things like that? So a lot of things sort of came out from that experience of needing to do remote production, leveraging networks, and then sort of push into back into the core plant. How do we get IP at origination so that we can get some flexibility across the line? So this is a picture of the back of a production switcher. And if you're on operations side, in the UK, it's the vision mixer. It's the thing with all the buttons, all the cameras come into it. This typically might have 100, 150 inputs coming into it, couple of dozen outputs coming out of it, and this is what might be producing your local news or your whatever you're producing in your studio plant. There's a lot of upside. The move to IP, we can get to something like this, and each one of those input cards, you see a fiber on the left and a fiber on the right. It's a 100 gigabit per second Ethernet connection, and it's carrying 4 or 8 or 16 video flows, and in some cases bidirectionally. So great, like we've got a simplified wiring scheme. Moving the heat out of the rack is easier. If you're in an OB vehicle, you save weight on the road and things like that. Nicely elegant from an engineering standpoint, but you have then a fiber that's carrying 16 HD signals on it, and if that fiber has a malfunction or someone damages the fiber or something happens, then a chunk of signals can go away. And the troubleshooting of that event is significantly different if it's IP. So we have an elegance in sort of the physical nature of how we're wiring this stuff up. Like instead of 300 coax cables touching this device, we have a couple of dozen fibers touching this production switcher. So there's a lot of good reasons upside to do that. And we're keeping in mind that, like, why are we doing this? We're doing this so that we can service a flexible plant and respond. Day comes when we want to produce in HDR or 4K or do something much more easier to do if everything is IP from the ground up. So then we get to the day where that SDI router is not what it used to be. Dozens and dozens of coax connections in the back, in the data center, in the wiring closet. It is a stack of gear that looks like your IT wiring closet. It is Ethernet ports of varying types, fiber and copper, and RJ45s and SFPs for fiber connections. And now we have this core that behaves differently. And it's built out of enterprise-level IT gear. Cisco, Arista, Juniper, places that do like gazillions of IT switches and routers. We leverage that to get what we need to do our media flows so that the new thing for the Ciscos of the world is like we broadcast production folk now want to move our cameras on this. So we have to have the bandwidth, we have to have the trunking in between them, we have to engineer in the network design redundancy, like what's the mean time to repair if a box falls over. We do all the things, dual power supplies and all that sort of stuff, but to the Ciscos of the world, there is typically a category of their product that is ready for media. Not just the bandwidth, but the things like the clock. So instead of BlackBurst, we will have into this fabric plugged in our sync pulse generator, which normally would hand off BlackBurst to everybody and tri-level sync in many cases. We'll also hand off the clock signal to this IP fabric. And it's the design of the clock is a requirement now. And as you put these things together, that clock then has to present, it's called PTP, Precision Time Protocol. From a broadcasting sense, we looked across and went like, who has the most intense, precise clock in the planet? It comes from the use in embedded clock signals like in automotive, comes in the embedded time clocks for like financial transactions and things like that, where nanoseconds matter and lots of money comes or goes. So from a standards perspective, we looked across and we sort of robbed that clock and said, okay, all this media stuff now, we're gonna run on this new clock, we're gonna plug it into this fabric, and we're gonna programmatically expose that clock. It's like the equivalent of DA on BlackBurst going through DAs and touching all the equipment. We're touching all the equipment with a clock and with the signal pass through this stack of IT stuff. Initially, like, I know you're thinking, like, this is what a headache to go through. But we're kind of past the really, really hard part. Not maybe as hard as it sounds. It is invasive, and when you make that decision to take the step, either in migration or IP from the ground up, it's invasive in that troubling way that when the doctor brings up surgery and uses the word invasive, you know you gotta be careful and you wanna be thoughtful about what you're doing. Because it does ground up change a lot of things. And that's important not just in the choice of components, like we need new cameras to support this, we need new switchers, new servers, but in the staffing and the support of this, because it is a very, very different thing to understand. And heads up, if you're on the engineering staff or in the engineering leadership positions, it is the thing to start to study and understand, even if your particular environment doesn't have on the near term plans to change, like to do anything different. If you're going to deliver what you're delivering for the next amortization cycle, no problem, but it's still something to be aware of because on the horizon is this change. So, I tell people we're past the bloody part. The standards that we use to put this stuff together may be 4 years old at this point. And leading into the pandemic, major media groups worldwide were starting to make this change, some faster than others. A mix of 4K and HD applications, a mix of fixed production resources and mobile. But we're past the really, really hard part. We make in all of our components now IP cards that can plug into the CCU, can plug into the servers, can plug into the routing, the production switcher, and a lot of the other vendor components that we don't make, like character generators and multi-viewers and things like that. A lot of the companies that you deal with have looked at the market and the market movement and started that path of saying, okay, yes, we have an IP option, and we can then drop those into the system design going forward, and then you get sort of to the place where you're used to, and that is like, I can select a CG, I can select a multi-viewer, and we have sort of a common ground to build our systems on. So from Sony's standpoint, I mentioned sort of this history in part so you don't go like, I don't want to be the first guy to go all IP, and then, you know, that's a bloody challenging experience. And we're not. Worldwide, North America has been somewhat slower than the world. We've done a number of systems. These are just like IP systems that Sony's been involved with. Some to get to 4K faster. Some in the OB category to get to less heavy cables and practical things. and to get some flexibility, because if, for example, if you're an OB truck, if you're in the business of televising ball games, you may shoot a ball game in one format one day and a different format another day, and then have customers that say, okay, well, we have this marquee event, we want to do it in UHD with high dynamic range with Dolby Atmos, and so they have to be able to exercise that format flexibility. So worldwide, a bunch of different things have been evolving over the last 3-4 years. In this country, large media broadcasters going through that cycle of refresh, then have made the move to IP ground up, like all in, carefully engineered for redundancy and a lot of staff training and working with vendors as we iron out these sorts of systems. So you very much can get to the point where you're putting together systems. If you have a new studio or you're refreshing parts of your studio, you can get to the point where you can make those best of breed decisions in the context of an IP backbone system and put those things together. An important thing to note is, like, we have sort of this thing like the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. And the harm that is attractive is to change things for people in operations. So in all of this, remember that it's under the hood stuff, right? If your production team were to come into the studio and you would tell them, oh, this is all new, state of the art now, IP, backbone, great. But it's got to look and feel like the things that they've been used to. Like, the buttons need to be in the same place. You got to start out with not impacting the production, your internal customers, really. And we do that. When you build up an IP, anyone in front of the camera or anyone shading cameras or TD pushing buttons on a switcher, hard panels for routers and things like that's going to look and feel the same. That can look exactly like it did, and that's important. So we don't, like, change is super hard in operations, and we don't want to say we built all this, it's state-of-the-art IP, we can do a million different things, but the buttons are in a different place, and we're going to confuse a lot of people. So we can achieve that, and we do achieve that in the move to IP. This is a glance at one of the major media companies in New York that you probably watch from time to time. But ground up, multi-floor environment, 4 studios, mixed vendor, fully redundant, IP throughout. And it went on the air 2 years ago or so. And some of the main media companies, they're leading a lot of what's going on in IP, and that trickles down throughout the broadcast chain. So I mentioned that the devices then have a path. We can add into a switcher. If you have 100 inputs to your production switcher, you can add in a card and start to send and receive IP inputs and outputs. That can coexist, and then you can have a small bit of IP-driven media flow exchange and grow into it. So islands of IP are one approach by some. Some station groups are starting to start there. Some stations are starting with a sandbox environment. Let's try it out, start to learn about how it behaves, and let our engineers start to learn about how the troubleshooting is different and things like software change management and things like that enter the picture. So if we took what was interconnecting everything, cameras to display monitors, to switchers, to multi-viewers, and we took it from coax to Ethernet, then sort of like if you took a switch and 2 computers and just plug them in, and maybe it's a camera and a display monitor, and plug them in to that Ethernet sort of backbone, doesn't do anything. It doesn't do what we're used to in video out. I got a video in, and it goes. Just like computers, you have to give them an IP address, and you have to put them on the same subnet, and you have to have applications that know to talk to each other, and then the devices sort of come to life and exchange media streams or whatever they're doing. So I'll describe what happens then. We get the devices physically into the Ethernet fabric, and then we have to control them. And it's more complex to do that simple thing of camera out to display in take. Like, it's just different. And it's almost like when you get smart appliances. I have a dishwasher that's on the Wi-Fi. I don't know exactly why, but every once in a while I get an email that says there's a firmware upgrade for your dishwasher. So it's more complex in managing the devices. So if we have now things interconnected by a network route, how do we manage that? Well, if we're on the engineering side and we're designing and building, take comfort in a good solid baseline of standards. So the answer to troubleshooting, I picture X number of years ahead, troubleshooting systems will point you back to a relatively small set of standards. You'll hear people use the phrase 2110, and they mean IP, kind of generically IP. SMPTE 2110 is the definition of the bit streams that are coming for signals coming into and out of all the devices. So if you say I need a CCU or I need a display and I need to take an IP input into it, they may say like it's a 2110, it's a flow now. So these are all IP streams, separate IP streams for video, audio, ancillary data. And they're governed by 2110 specs. So the move to IP for media workflows is the move to 2110 sort of generically. The other parts of this, AMWA, NMOS, JTNM, those are the rest of the equation that establish basic workflow. AMWA is all about workflows, JTNM, Joint Task Force for Network Multimedia, have reference architectures about how we put cameras and monitors and switchers and servers and graphics and all those things together on a system level. Second to 2110 is NMOS, Network Media Open Standards. That's what you, as engineers, you'll come to know because it governs the very simple thing of a device on your network tasked with doing a really simple thing. Keep track of what's plugged into the network. I've got these cameras, they have these characteristics. I've got these display devices, they have these characteristics. Keep track of that in a database and make routes. Accept the input from the user that says, camera one, display 10, take. That contact closure input then behind the scenes becomes the thing that triggers sort of an API conversation, and it's complex. But that input then keep track of what's plugged in and then execute routes. And the short version is, to make a route, you talk to the receiver over its API, and you tell it the IP address of the sender, which might be the camera, and the receiver then goes and talks to the switch to find out where that video flow is and joins that multicast so that the video flows and it goes. It's significantly more complicated than video out, video in, and it goes. But that's the controller part of this whole equation. So you'll have the devices plugged in and two primary things that are going to do this: management and control. And the goal is to get to the thing that we have in our laptops in terms of, like, if I walk up to my laptop with a mouse and I plug it in, then the machine magically knows that somebody plugged in a mouse, I'll get it ready, I'll find the driver, go ahead. We'll get to the point, and we're kind of there, where if the IP addresses are right, we can fire up a camera, set the IP addresses, connect it into the fabric, and your controller will go, oh, I've got a new device in this environment. And for security reasons, at least on our broadcast controller, it will then ask the operator to authorize that device, because, like, we're not, as a community, super good at security, like, honestly. So we're trying to be better about protecting and hardening this IP thing that we're creating. So camera comes on, hey, I found a new camera, it's got these capabilities. Do you want to let it into the party? Check. Authorized. Good. So that's sort of evolving quite nicely, and away we go. So I mentioned NMOS. There's two parts of that, the registration, and you'll learn the term ISO 4 and ISO 5, registration and discovery, which is the plug-and-play idea that we have to have, and then making routes, connections. And we call those patches. That's what they call them. And to make it a little bit easier, you see in the bottom on the left, this is like the good housekeeping seal of approval, if you remember what that was. Vendors can submit for testing the certification that says, I got my device, and I got the IP ins and outs, and I want it to be a good citizen that can play nicely in a 2110 IP environment for media production. It goes through an automated batch of testing, and if it passes everything, because this is all really an API exercise under the hood, if it passes everything, you get the seal of approval in a couple of different flavors, but to engineers and designers and technology leaders, that means that that thing has gone through sort of the basic compliance and can drop into a 21 system. There are still a few gray areas that cause us trouble, but by the most part, we have this sort of structure set up. And it comes to you from a lot of people that spend a lot of time hammering out those standards and those things that we're now building these systems on. There will be also a lot of situations where you have legacy gear that can't immediately be changed over, right? Like not everything in the plant goes end of life at the same time. So you may need to bring along, very likely, things that either have not transitioned to IP or not yet, or just need to transition a little bit later. So most systems and designs will have gateways, and you'll have chassis with cards like you see here that might have 8 BNCs for devices and Ethernet, typically 25 gig Ethernet ports going into the IP fabric. So those things can live for a long time, another replacement cycle just fine. So you'll have a lot of gateways and things, or people may walk in the door with, you know, a camera head that just needs to get into the system or something like that. So gateways are a part of this, and that's sort of covered, that's sort of all right. So all things considered then, we have sort of the tools that we need to respond at the right time, next year, 5 years from now, whenever it is, to the new requirements. And in the meantime, we can do clever things like, and we may have one in the exhibit hall, throw down boxes next to cameras that can take all of those signals, bidirectional signals, a couple of videos coming into the production, return video coming out, intercom audio, all those signals now on a fiber pair that can find the nearest wiring closet and deliver that signal anywhere on the network where you've accommodated it for bandwidth and for clock and for things like that. So, for example, a recent large project, they use the term any camera anywhere. So between two buildings, two production centers, the notion was we want to have network touch points at every floor, accessible everywhere, that we could drop down a camera and or a recorder and deliver those camera signals to the control room, to any of the control rooms in our environment, which is different, which is something you can't do with SDI. If you said the executive on the 25th floor wants to do a live punch into a news show, it's hard to get SDI and coax up and around into that end of the building. We end up having to do different sort of transmission hacks and things like that. But the network ports that are now everywhere, if properly designed, can bring us things like that. So we can sort of do clever and interesting things like that, a different view of the same thing. So from a top level design point, on the left is sort of conventionally what we would build out. We need a studio, we need a control room, we need a second studio, we bolt a second control room. Maybe we have some patching and some tie lines between those things, but the move to IP says we can think differently about that in terms of resource sharing, physically dispersed, but when we need a studio and a control room or a subset of cameras or a part of a switcher resource, we can dynamically assign that, do a production independently of what other things might be doing, and then release those resources to something else. This might be a little bit hard to see, but if you had a machine room with a bunch of resources, production switchers, graphics boxes, newsroom automation, or whatever, it's now possible then, for example, to turn the production switcher, chop it in half, and give part of those resources to one control room, say in HD, and give part of those resources to another control room in UHD or 4K, and then combine those resources when you need it. So you could have different day parts with a control room and a set of cameras, and then trigger a macro and then make all those changes that now rearrange those connections. Different set of cameras, different studio space, different set of camera shaders, which might be remote, and do those things sort of programmatically. Really gets interesting and creative and is really the upside, the payoff, because then from the technical plant you get to say, you get to answer business requirements with, hey, could we do this? And you like, yeah, we can do that. Like, you want to do that? We can do that. We'll program it and we'll make it work. And things that we couldn't do if we were hard-coded, it's sort of growing out of coax and HD and SDI for flexibility and for downstream reasons. So I mentioned a couple of things that sort of have to be part of this equation. We're almost done. The IP controller has to attach and give you the ability to route and keep track of things. Broadcast automation and network automation is another part of this equation. So into this fabric, we connect a server. Imagine two different servers, you know, HP, DL, whatever, attached to the fabric that can see all the devices. And all the devices are just IP addresses, kind of, really. The broadcast controller then is going to let us route. And then the other part is the automation, the idea that we have all these things, all these devices, that now have their own web page for configuration, and they can store configs, and they can recall those things, and we can do all. It's a lot of devices to manage from the support standpoint and from the operational standpoint. So part of the investment thinking is we have to have a broadcast controller, because nothing happens if you don't have it. On the left, you'll see sort of like that visualization, hard panels or UIs that let people route signals where they want to route signals to and from different things. On the right is sort of the idea of like, how do we make this supportable and manageable? And so there are platforms, we have a really nice one, that help that and help the supportability of this. By doing things like leveraging monitoring characteristics, like some of the tricks from the IT side, alerts and alarms, some of the things that will save your life when you go to find out why a signal is not where it needs to be, or why it's distorted, or there's latency, or something like that. This is a picture that, and it's all about dashboards and business information, but this is a picture that can change dynamically if you then say, I need the camera to go to a different RC control panel or a different shading spot. You can visually glance up and go, oh, yes, that something happened and that is in place. You can have a picture of your rack then to help a technician respond, and you maybe can't see it, but on the left side we have indicators, red lights and green lights, that can receive the alerts from that piece of gear, show the operator, the technician that's in charge of making sure the show goes off, if there's an alert, they can tap on it, they can see what the alert is, they can speed the process of troubleshooting, and that becomes a really critical thing when we have no more patch points, we can't take a wire off and put it in another device and say the video's good. It doesn't happen that way in IP, but we can leverage software platforms that let us monitor and do that. And the last thing, this is just a glimpse at sort of a dynamic bit of documentation, because we don't have in IP the thing that we're used to, which is I can trace that camera signal from the CCU to the DA to the production switcher to the core router. Now we just draw a cloud, right? Like it's just a bubble in the middle and everything's connected. So we can't do the signal tracing that we're used to, but we can have the environment tell us, how are you getting that camera signal from your camera to the monitor? Well, because it's not coming out of the monitor correctly. Well, it's coming off this Ethernet port. That port reports good. It has these details. It's hitting this switch. It's going to this spine switch on this port. And then you get your IT guys to go like, why isn't this port? Like there's a big blinking red light halfway through and it's preventing my camera signal from getting there. We leverage IT sort of tools to do that. And that's a whole expansive, wonderful thing. That is part of the equation when you think about, like, when do we go IP? Do we need to? Do we want to? How do we future-proof and things like that? And I think that might be the conclusion. So, in summary, just like what we considered when we thought about, when does my station go or my production activity go from SD to HD? On the horizon is, when do we go from SDI to pure IP ground up? Why are we doing it? How does it future-proof us? What's involved? And it's in component selection. It's in the educational process of migrating the engineering support from SDI legacy to IP. And that all bundles in together to think about what we're doing upstream so that we can exercise enhanced content in different delivery outputs. We have some white papers and things. If you need, we can set you up with those things, and we'll wrap it up and take questions. Or we are honestly past the hard part, so don't like it's not. It's more complicated across the board, but.
So in your production systems, is the video coming out of the camera completely uncompressed, and it remains uncompressed the entire way through the switches into the production switcher, out, and ultimately to encoders or wherever it's going? It's uncompressed the entire way? Or are there cases where there is compression being used? Because the nature of an IP fabric would allow for such a thing easily if you wanted to do it.
Sure. The lion's share, not like 99% of the equation at this moment, is an uncompressed replacement for SDI. Because you wouldn't need to or want to introduce any compression between a camera and a production switcher, for example. Those examples where we're getting remote camera feeds, relatively recently, and in the SMPTE-2110 spec, there's an accommodation for compressed signals. If that camera needed to get some compression to be delivered across the path that you have, it can then engage a codec, a compressor, typically JPEG-XS is the most popular form. And you can take that bandwidth, which in UHD might be nominally 12 gigabit per second, and then squeeze it into the bandwidth that you have to deliver it, hit a decoder, and then bring it back into the environment. So by and large, it's meant to be uncompressed for everything. Video streams, audio streams, and ancillary data streams. Often audio is the hardest part on it, like weirdly, managing the audio tracks are super hard for a variety of reasons. For those edge places where we need compression or want compression, we may have a camera or set of cameras and we dial in, sometimes J2K, but JPEG-XS compression to let it move. It's a very low latency. It remains in time as it needs to be, and we accommodate that.
And just to follow up, so the SMPTE standard that this is based on is that just an IP encapsulation of the SDI payload?
Yes, it is, except here's something fundamentally different. In the early iterations, say 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and there's at least one media company that still builds on it, the first iteration was a version of that called 2022-6, which emulated that coax cable, meaning it sort of muxed in the video fields and the audio packets and the ancillary data packets into one stream that point-to-point delivered uncompressed SDI video payload. Then we quickly learned, like we together, that that's not optimal because if I just want the audio tracks in one corner of the building, I don't need to send that 3 gig payload just to extract the 2 megabit audio payload. So 2110 is built on the idea that coming out of the camera are really separate streams and flows, and you route those things separately. If the vision mixer just needs the video, the high bandwidth thing, then we route that stream. It's the video flow, it's a gigabit per second or whatever. If the audio desk just needs the audio packets, we make a separate route for the audio and we deliver those things. And if you have ancillary data, captions and signaling and things like that, then you route that where you need it. So 2110 took the combined aggregate bitstream and sort of built up an idea that that camera is really three different streams per.
Last question. So in this sort of environment, are there products available that can reconstitute an SDI stream from all of these different components, say for legacy equipment?
Oh yeah, of course. So the gateway product, for example, and there's some that exist on an SFP that do it really compactly. We call it adaptation, but it's an IP stream, like you route a video stream to the card, an audio stream, and ancillary data if you want it, and then adapt that and output an SDI stream that is in time. And so you get sort of frame sync along the way because all those packet flows are timed together and they stay in time. But yes, the IP to SDI is a common thing that you'll use for a long time.
So it's not a bit for bit identical, but it is a valid SDI stream that has all of
the payload is exactly bit for bit. So the frames of video, those 10-bit samples of video in 422 chrominance or whatever you're sending, those are identical because we're just de-encapsulating. We're taking it out of the IP wrapper and then reformatting it and adding SDI timing. And there's, we don't need to, but SDI needs to have ancillary space, vertical bank space, and horizontal ancillary space, because that's the way it's formatted, and that's the way machines are looking for it. So the essence, the media flows are completely preserved.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One more. We have one more question out there.
Yeah, my question is the cost going to IP for the video and the production system, does that substantially reduce it, let's say, from an HDI system? Is it less now, or because the hardware is kind of readily available?
It's not less, and it's not just in terms of the components. So to specify like a production switcher with all IP/IO won't be significantly more than if you did it with SDI plumbing. Not deadly a lot more, but here's the thing. There will be cost associated with building up the tool set and the people resources, the educational effort, those dashboards, the melding of those two cultures, the soft costs. that will be vitally important. So the investment, apart from the component for component swap, the investment in, for example, those automation pieces will be a new cost, but will be like vital to running it with fewer people and running it and giving repeatable automation things to this now this library of devices. There's different costs. So the cheapest thing is get the new version of what you've always had. That's always going to be cheaper. Nobody has to learn anything new. And if your business plan looks out and says, for the next whatever the amortization schedule is, we're going to deliver what we deliver in exactly the same way, which may be perfectly valid, then it will be the most cost efficient to just do that one-to-one replacement. Then you sort of consider what are the competitive things that are happening. If my competitor then is delivering regional sports in HDR or 4K or something, you know, then you sort of gamble about when you want to make that transition. Maybe you lease or rent parts for production and then handle it in an editorial way. It's the roll of the dice. It's, you know, what do you think your business plan is going to be? How much is it worth to sort of future-proof and things like that? But penny for penny, it's like it's going to be the cheapest answer to just replace and stay within the confines of what you do today.
Also, I was just wondering about small production switchers for like a small broadcast, like a church or something like that. A lot of people are using Blackmagic switchers. Does Sony have a small production switcher that you can run a few cameras?
Not anymore. No. So that sort of tier and those sort of applications where you can well define what you're doing, and that's where you may be perfectly okay with some compressed segments and things like that. That fits a niche nicely. 2110 in the broadcast applications for uncompressed signals are sort of where the primary suite of, we call it IP Live, work and play. So.
Thank you, Steve. Not to the applause.